Observatory, straight up the block to West Boulevard and make that right.
They didn't break that, but they have pretty good access to those people.
Yeah, subconsciously mocks that lineage. But
he's so that's happening.
It seems like an incredible story here on many fronts.
From One World Trade Center in Manhattan, this is the New Yorker Radio Hour, a co-production of WNYC Studios and The New Yorker.
Hi, I'm David.
Hi, David. Thanks. Thank you. It's nice to meet you. Thanks for having us.
Welcome to the New Yorker Radio Hour. I'm David Remnick. I've never made it much of a secret that if I had my druthers, like a lot of other people, I'd be pretty happy playing guitar for a living, but it ain't going to happen. Nevertheless, it's a huge thrill for me to have one of the most exciting bands of recent decades come on the show. The Breeders. The Breeders helped define the sound of rock and roll in the 90s. Kim Deal had played bass in the Pixies, and to form a new band, she recruited her sister, a drummer she knew from Ohio, and an Englishwoman she'd met on tour. And 25 years ago, they put out Last Splash, an album of insistent yet melodic punk. They toured with Nirvana, who were their fans, but they were miserable tours too. Battles with drugs, fights, defections, and side projects. Although the songs lived on in the canon of indie rock, it seemed like the Breeders' moment had come and gone. This year, though, the original members are back together, and they've released a new album called All Nerve. Kim Deal, her twin sister Kelly Deal, bassist Josephine Wiggs, and drummer Jim McPherson join me in the studio to play some songs off the new record. I've got to ask you, as somebody whose singular dream growing up was not to have anything to do with a magazine, but to be in a rock and roll band, what's it like to not be 23 and in a band and together again and touring after the long history you've had? It must be what?
There's a couple of questions in there. What's it like not to be 23? That's a question.
I already know the answer.
What's it like to still be in a band with these particular people, and how do I feel about the stretch of time?
I have a great answer to
this. No, I've got a great answer. You go ahead first.
Okay, this is Kelly. My first answer is when I was 23, I was working for a defense contractor. So that question kind of, parts of it just kind of slide right by me. Mm. Go ahead, Joe.
Well, my answer might be a little dark.
Oh, good.
What a surprise.
Do you remember that film documentary about the couple? I think they lived in Queens, where I think she was a model. And her boyfriend became extremely jealous of her and threw acid in her face. Do you remember that? And she was blinded.
This is not going to end well,
is it? No. Well, it depends how you look at it. And then later in life, like 30 years later or something, they met again and they were married. And the thing about it is that for her, because she's blind, they're the same as they were 30 years ago.
Kim, you're laughing because you understand it, you don't understand it, you agree or disagree.
It makes complete sense.
Yeah.
To me, yes, that she would just miss over the part of, so we were the people who threw the acid in your face?
So it was just like the passion that they had then was still there, and so no time had passed or
no,
something?
No, it's
passion.
For her, the psychopathy? For her, she's not old.
So you're disillusioned, you're delusional enough to think.
It's like a chance to go backwards. You know what I mean? Well, not backwards. It's a chance to relive things.
But thank God. But it's not a nostalgia trip because you have a new album.
Not.
It's a terrific album. And it feels consistent with what you were, but something new. That's really rare. How did you come to get back together? Because if you look at old interviews of the Beatles, for example, at any given moment after they broke up, one would be in favor of it, but two were against it. And then three would be in favor of it and one's against it. So it never quite happened. And then tragedy occurred, life occurred. How did it happen that you all agreed all at once?
This is Kelly again. Kim was visiting me over at my house on the couch. And my house is not on a couch, by the way. It just we happen to be on
You're
the couch.
You're a stickler for grammar.
So
and your house is where?
In Dayton, Ohio. Yeah. And she came over to visit, and I was sitting there, and it was 2012. And I was like, you know, next year, 2013, is going to be the 20th anniversary of Last Splash. And you know how bands are kind of celebrating. I thought, wouldn't it be fun if we just called Jim and Joe and just did a couple, like, shows where we did the album from, you know, track one to the very last track and just did the whole album.
And I said, yeah, you get a hold of Jim, I'll get a hold of Joe, because me and Jim were mad at each other.
Why were you mad at each other?
Well, after the Breeders' Last Splash, me and Jim carried on and we started a band together called The Amps. And it devolved a bit.
Mm-hmm. You're making a drinking motion with your hand. I see. Yeah. Truth in advertising.
And honestly, when we got back from that tour, Jim, in like 96, I went downstairs to my basement and all his drums were out of the basement. And I thought, oh my God, what did I say to Jim? And we hadn't talked from 2006, Jim, or 7.
Jim, you want to kick in here? What did she say to really piss you off?
It was a big black blur.
I see. So the drinking was a serious thing.
Well, at the time, not just that time, right then, that tour was right. Something else. So anyway, I forgot what we were talking
getting
about.
Getting back together.
Oh, and yeah. You guys didn't chat
and
for a while.
And you asked Jim, and he said he'd love to do it, and I asked Joe, and she said she'd love to do it.
I was doing music for film. I did music for a couple of feature films and doing more kind of ambient music and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And doing a lot of recording on my own, but it's really different. Being in a band, doing music with a band and playing in a rock band is really different. And as soon as we got back together again, I was like, oh, I actually really miss this. I really miss being on stage and making a really loud noise and playing with loud drums and playing a rock show.
The new album is called All Nerve, so let's listen to the title track. What does the title phrase mean, All Nerve?
I mean, I think, of course, it can mean many things, but what I embrace about it is the idea that just hopelessly delusional, just absolutely a break, a psychotic break from reality. I mean, when it's so sad when somebody believes something so much and it's not true. And I feel like I've had like that before.
I won't stop.
I want to know, because I've never experienced it, and it just seems like possibly the best thing that you can do. Playing in front of a big crowd, playing the music that you love, and having that all come together in this way that nights like that can be, what is that like?
I don't know. I think the idea, it's funny that you're... you can tell you have this rock and roll fantasy going, don't you?
I do.
I love it. It is.
Who doesn't?
It is adorbs.
Who doesn't? Who well, doesn't?
We don't.
We don't.
That's because you it's, do you it. Know, it's your job.
And I guess part of that is
but
because...
But there's a really big difference between the rock and roll fantasy and the reality of rock and roll.
That's not actually what being in a band is about.
No, it's really not.
It's not, yeah. That is so not what being in a band is about. It's about everything but that.
Everything
that's
but
incidental.
The performance? I
mean, that is... I mean, what... It doesn't matter if it's 30 people or 300 or 30,000 or big, huge festivals. It's that moment that it's all that the indefinable stuff, the you know, what is the space stuff, the space gunk, all the
so it's
dark
just,
matter what that happens
are you saying
on
that
the
it's
stage.
Just
you know?
You four and the crowd doesn't matter so much?
Well, you do get energy from that. Sometimes my favorite moments are in the basement when the arc of a song
we've worked on this part and it hasn't been sounding good. And then somebody comes up with an idea where it's like, we do it. And then like, oh yeah, that sounded good. That to me is really the place that I like to be.
There are so many. And also to go back to your point about your fantasy, David, about playing in front of 30,000 people, often we'll be on the way somewhere and we'll be like, oh gosh, you know, it's like a really, you know, small venue and they've only sold half the tickets. Doesn't happen very often, though,
by the way. Yeah,
it's very rare. And we could get bummed out about that. But in actual fact, sometimes those are the best shows.
Now, you've made no secret, you guys especially, that that your acquaintance with drugs and alcohol was pretty intense. And do you feel do you feel like you survived something?
I do, yeah, definitely.
Like you dodged a bullet?
Yeah,
the
and
bullet?
Especially now. And people are just dropping like flies. It's crazy, yeah, yeah.
Where you live and everywhere?
Just in general, yeah.
And you find friends dying and people you know from the old neighborhood?
I don't, not really, because the friends that I have now, I don't really hang out with people who are using, you know.
It's too big a risk.
Well, risk. You know, heroin addicts are really boring people.
I can
they
second
that.
They are
super boring. Their world is very, very tiny, and they have a full-time job that takes every second of their life up.
Getting drugs.
Yeah, and so having a chat or sitting or having a coffee, no.
What did it do to the music? When you were using, what did drugs do for the music or take away from the music? You've been pretty honest that it gave something to the music at times.
You know, when the Pixies first started playing, there was no smoking pot and drinking, you know. I remember us, Jolt Cola just came out, and I remember us taking the weekend and in a studio, and he had to really buckle down and finish all the tracks in one weekend, and we drank Jolt Cola.
Yeah, I'm not talking about Jolt Cola,
awesome.
Though.
I know.
It's so adorable.
I know.
How
I
sweet.
Think it's like the rock and roll fantasy where there's an idea that it's been every moment, and it's not.
It's basically a blackout, a party. Yeah, yeah, no. But yeah. It's progressive. You know, the disease is progressive.
Yeah,
you know,
so. And I think, like, there was a time eventually where, you know, just getting super baked and on pot, you know.
It's actually really destructive. I have to tell you, this is why I stopped playing with them. Because I couldn't stand it.
Because? What was happening?
It's just not fun. It's not fun to be around people who are so absent. Like, so, you know, like Kelly was saying a minute ago.
So what attempt did you make to...
I don't
to,
know.
To,
whether or not we're even like... we're having, you know, blackouts.
Jim was sober.
Destroying.
And I wasn't doing... I mean, that's a little... It's a little misleading, I think, when you say that. Because you act like I was like... crazed or something.
No, I just mean...
That's what you're saying.
No, right. I'm
home.
Saying...
Huh? You weren't home.
Yeah.
Present.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In the way that you are now.
It's not like, you know, we're destroying dressing rooms or anything.
Oh,
it's
God,
not like
right.
that, no.
You're not throwing
but
TVs
just...
into swimming pools. It's just you're
I
not
actually
there.
Did do that with Chris Novoselic.
You did not.
We did. It was so much fun, and he was... adorable, and
whoa,
we went up to the hotel room.
What? You're on a high floor, and you did the TV into
yeah,
the swimming
no,
pool
but
thing.
You have to listen how we did it.
I'm all ears.
So he goes, "Okay, I've never done this. Do you want to do it?" So he called down to the front desk, and he said, "I want to throw a TV out the window.
Oh my God!
I will pay for the TV, and I just want to make sure everybody's safe. So can you?" And so we did this thing, and we organized it. It was the most adorable, sweet. Rock and roll fantasy. I wish you were there.
I would have loved it. How did I miss it?
And it was done with such heart and joy and fun.
Will you
and
call me the next time you do this?
Sure, definitely.
I really need
and
this in
so
my life.
We carried it over and we had to make sure, like, you know, and then threw it out. It was super fun.
It's not going to be the same now, though, is it?
No,
yeah,
it's really,
going to be throwing a little thin
story.
Yeah, come on.
Yeah, it's like a...
So
like
you got
more like a frisbee with a flat screen TV.
So Joe,
yeah,
all kidding aside, CRT, you got fed up.
You couldn't connect. I think it was largely Lollapalooza. It was Lollapalooza. I found very alienating tour.
Why?
Just because it went on for 3 months, and we were often in the middle of we would arrive in the middle of a field somewhere.
It was like band camp. I loved it. It was so much fun.
That's because they were partying the whole time. Whereas I'm not a partier.
And you were in your room reading Dickens or Jane Austen.
We didn't have rooms. We were on the bus. Oh. And in fact, there was a little glimpse.
So there's no escape.
Yeah, the music would start at 11 in the morning. There would
Josephine is like a cat.
Pounding.
A vegan cat.
Music all day, every day. So you could never slip away and read a book. You know what I mean? It was kind of grueling, yeah. I found.
And why, and this always occurred to me looking at bands as a kid and as I got older, I'm looking at bands one after the other after the other. It's all five guys and a woman singing. Very, very rarely did it break out of that mold. And when it did, it was a kind of a thing. There are bands that you could obviously name.
Are you talking about back in the day or now?
Still.
Oh, no. There's a ton of... It's not the wrong bands.
But it's not by any stretch 50-50.
Which genre are you talking about?
In almost any genre.
Yeah, but what is 50-50? Nothing is 50-50, is it?
Kim, at one point you said that misogyny was the backbone of the music business.
Yes.
Still. Mm-hmm.
Well, it's interesting that you're talking about this because I've been going back and forth about the ideal of... I used to get it every 6 months. I would get an interview lined up, and the paper would say, we're running something on women in rock, the resurgence of women in rock. About the third year of me getting the fourth resurgence of women in rock, I begin to see, oh, there's not really a resurgence of women in rock. It's just a theme. It's a story. It's an angle for the newspaper to actually come up like, you know, salsa players, you know, or something like that. It's an idea. So that's another thing is like, is there a resurgence of women in rock? Has there been a less? Here's what I've decided. Women don't get covered. So there's an appearance that women aren't in music. Just like that gentleman from the Grammys, Neil Portnoy or whatever his name is, who said that women really need to step up if they want to be represented in the Grammys. Not really understanding that he's not representing women in the Grammys. Period. That was the problem. Not that we need to step up to be represented, but we just weren't being represented. So it's a little odd.
So it's the institutions that put these bands and performers and artists forward, whether it's the award show or the press or promoters or what have you.
For some reason, it's just this recurring thing, just like festivals. Now, supposedly festivals are getting a little bit better. This much Pitchfork just did an article. 2018 is this much better. They have a little bar graph and stuff like that.
You're holding your fingers about a quarter of an inch apart.
Yes, of the women performers compared with the male performances in the year of 2018 and 2017. Mm. So anyway, probably these festivals are saying, yeah, but these women don't get, we need media artists, artists who are covered by the media to be on our festivals. So our festivals will get media and will get coverage. Mm. Of course, if you don't put them on the, it's just a loop that it just, it's, I mean, do I have to explain it? Somebody else could probably explain
it. It's a catch-22 is what she's saying.
It's even more than that.
You're saying something worse than a catch-22, that it's systemic and it extends from music
everywhere else. It is systemic, and it's a continuing thing. It doesn't seem like it's ever, it's just, it's eating itself, and which is quite different than the backbone of the industry being misogynistic, which it is, by the way, but go ahead.
I want to ask you about your presence on stage, specifically you. Amanda Petrusich, who writes for us, recently wrote this. Kim Deal hasn't done any of the things that we expect girls to do on stage. She never preened, confessed, flirted, demurred, or compromised. Was that a conscious thing on your part, how you come off and appear on stage, the way you are in front of an audience?
Well, I think it's because I think if I did those things, I would feel ridiculous. So I feel like those aren't available for me to do. So
There's another thing, though, that I just saw that somebody brought up again. I think in the Lizzie Goodman just happened to bring this up in an article she just wrote. It's just something that Charles had been reported as saying that it was something, I'm paraphrasing, about, you know, somebody asking him whether, you know, if there was problems with me or not and stuff like that. And he said, Kim, all she would have to do is smile and the crowd would erupt in cheers. And he was saying so that, you know, like you, me too, like you probably, that of course that's going to kind of bother me.
You're talking there about Charles Thompson, who was Black Francis of the Pixies. What was he getting at?
All I had to do was smile and the crowd was behind me. And I just think how incredibly sexist to think, you know, I'm sweating. I'm going to almost pass out with the heat. I just threw up a little bit in my mouth. The misogynistic tour driver did not go and pack, you know, get sanitary napkins. So I'm probably bleeding a little down my leg right then. Well, I'm absolutely, you know, I'm in this band who's like playing, like I'm doing downstrokes, you know, really fast music, exhausting, like a bass player, you know, so it's a big instrument with a big amp and big noise. And at the same time, I have to find the pitch of the song because I'm singing a melodic harmony on top of everything. So not only do I'm listening to the drummer with the rhythm, but just because I make it look easy, I know I make it look easy. But the thing is, I can't believe that somebody, like all of that is happening.
It sounded like a cinch.
And all I did was just sit there and smile and the crowd was clapping because I smiled. It's just like, wow, really? That's all I was there. I just smiled. I wasn't doing anything else. It just, does anybody think that's weird? No?
No. I totally understand how that would be like. No, you're discounting my years of work, toil, and everything that got, not only
singing
the experience
and pitch,
itself,
playing,
but
well,
like the years that you spent playing guitar, playing bass, writing songs, recording yourself, going to Radio Shack, buying the right cable, getting a soldering gun so you could fix
odd.
Those cables.
Like, oh,
you
know? We were in the middle of a show. I'm sweating and all I did was smile. It's just like, and they've clapped. Who knew? Who knows why? You're really, really stirring up a lot of stuff right now. I'm really angry.
You're pissed. You're angry.
I'm just
at me.
A little mad.
Sorry. I can see that. She's laughing, thank God. You're on stage in front of a crowd. You make these terrific records, and then you go home and you face really ordinary tragedies that we all face. We all have something. Everybody's got something. And you too. Your mother is quite sick at this mm-hmm. point. She has Alzheimer's. Who's caring for her? How do you carry that on the road with you? How do you live these kind of simultaneous lives? Is it must be extraordinarily difficult.
We have a great system. We have great caregivers. Mm-hmm. We have found a great place. They come in a few times a day, and they you know, make sure that she is not getting bed sores or.
What stage is she in?
Late. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Late. Non-vocal.
So
very, non-verbal.
And very passive.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
How does this all figure into your work, into the record, into your songs, if at all?
You have a beautiful song on your solo series that kind of touches on that.
Yeah.
It's online. It's beautiful. There's a beautiful video that goes along
with
it.
What's the song?
It's called Are You Mine?
You know what it got me thinking was like when I'm getting old and stuff, like I think, oh, well, at least I have my memories. And then seeing her lose them all, I think, wow, that's not even going to happen. I'm not going to sit there and just imagine my, you know, just, you know, oh, that was so great. Think of that. I'm doing things to cultivate this time where I'm going to just think back about my life and knowing that's all farce.
What memories would you want to be there to sustain you at the end?
I'd like to say the smile of my child and my husband's firm hands.
Should I point out the obvious here?
I'm not married and I don't have any children. I don't know. I had a cat I liked. He died a couple years ago.
Oh, my God. Have a beer.
No. I'm here. Now, you guys have integrity out the ears. Do you ever wish you had cashed in just a little bit more, sold out a little bit more?
I'm open to cashing it. Yeah. I just don't know. Did I can't find the opportunity? Road.
What would cashing it a bit look like?
I don't really
Retirement
know.
Plan?
Ah.
No, what does IRA. Cashing in look like?
I don't know. I think, you know, I used to go back.
What? Oh, I can't wait to hear this. She's covering your face.
It's a Pixies thing. It was Dave Lovering's mother. And she used to come backstage and she was from Massachusetts, you know, Boston. And she would say, what you need? She would see me and I would just be sweating mess, right? Whatever. And she would say, you need a jewel-encrusted bustier and some big chunky silver earrings and some makeup.
That's so a great idea.
The jewel-encrusted bustier is, cashing in. Madonna was popular at the time.
She
and I
was
think she must have
popular.
Had a jewel-encrusted bustier.
Now, I'm going to ask you to play for us. This has been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having us. We've enjoyed it, other than I'm slightly mad.
You don't seem slightly mad. I can tell you're flexing your muscle.
You're a good talker. I think it's a good thing that you're doing this for a living. You would be a drunken, strung-out bum if you had had the rock and roll lifestyle. I could see it not playing well with you.
Give me a chance.
And you would be
give me a chance.
An egomaniac walking
yes,
around.
Yes, that sounds fabulous.
Oh, my God.
Sounds so good.
I've laid the silent sun 1,000 times. I'm on it, but I'm going strange. The silence chills and shall cover me with wind and rock and sky. I'm not that way. I am the autumn and the scarlet. I am the makeup on your eyes. Island to sail, island sail. Yeah, we're moving.
Are Kim Deal, Kelly Deal, Josephine Wiggs, and Jim McPherson. They played Off You live at WNYC. Their new album's called All Nerve. The New Yorker Radio Hour is a co-production of WNYC Studios and The New Yorker. Our theme music was composed and performed by Meryl Garbus of Tune Yards, with additional music by Alexis Quadrado. The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported in part by the Chirina Endowment Fund.
Yeah, we're moving.